Tomorrow we're going to do both dances.
So this musician will be able to play in about an hour?
Yeah, he's going to play.
Is that Tomo?
Yeah, Tomo.
Tomo, can you tell me what that instrument is?
It's called gusle. It has one of the, I don't know how you call it. It has a bow and you'll see it anyways. He's going to do a little music, and he's been playing that. It's passed down his family, and that's how he learned it, from his ancestors and his father and everyone.
Can you do me one final favor? Would you introduce the members of your group? Can you do that?
Yeah. Her name is Vedrana Blagoje. She's 19 years old. She's been with us since we formed the group. Her name is Susana Spasoev. She's 18, and she just joined our group a couple months ago. She's doing pretty good. Her name is Biljana Jovanov. She's 16 years old. Right? Her name is Daliborka Stojanović. She's 12 years old. His name is Stevo Velimir. He's 13 years old. Right? Yeah. Okay. This is my buddy right here. He's Bojan Spasović. He's 14 years old. Her name is Dragana Todorović. She's 17. Jovanović. Okay. His name is Miko Jovanović. He's son of Tomo. He's 13 years old.
14,
sorry. Can't miss a year. His name is Vukosav Dragoljević. He's 25 years old. My name is Jurgica Dralta, and I'm 17 years old.
Let's have a big round of applause for Srpska Kruna, Serbian Crown Dance Troupe. Thank you for coming all this way, and I'm very excited to hear this. This is going to be a new one on me. I'm excited to learn about traditional music in Florida. I want to invite you all to stick around. I'd like to introduce Wormy Wasserman in a moment. Now, Mr. Wasserman has been demonstrating right beside us here, cracking his whip and leading a cow camp. I just didn't like to invite him to show off under the big tent here, is all I want to do. Probably going to introduce him in a moment, but I'd like to remind you that this is the Folklife performance stage of the Space Coast Folklife area, and we're brought to you by a partnership between the Florida Division of Environmental Protection, the Florida Park Service, and the Florida Department of State. So give us just one moment, and I'll get Mr. Wasserman to join us.
Turn you down. But I'll keep it on my time, but I can't wait to be with you when you're cracking it.
Because I don't want to show you that.
I'm very interested. Thank you. The gentleman to my right is Joe Wormy Wasserman, and he's been kind enough to come from his home in Christmas, Florida, to demonstrate the cow camp that he learned of and worked in as recently as the 1960s. And I believe he's brought his horse Bullet. And Bullet is in a cow pen just beyond us here. And Bullet is a cracker and quarter horse, am I right?
Yeah.
Wormy, can you tell me a little bit about the sorts of things you do when you're at a reenactment or when you've been working with cattle in the area next near Christmas?
Okay. Normally, when I'm doing reenactments, I go to schools. I set up a cow camp. This ain't really a cow camp I got set up. It's just a talking camp. I set up my lean-to. I talk about the cattle industry from 1870 back, post-Civil War. I also have my clothes I wear when I was living back in that time period, and my age and all. I would have been in the Cow Cavalry. The Cow Cavalry was a organization that fed the whole Confederacy. We fed some Yankee units too, but you know how them Yankees are, they steal what they want. But when I do my cow camp, I'm either riding a little old cracker horse I got, or you can call them a marsh tacky. That's two names that they have. We talk about our cracker cattle. If it wasn't for our cracker cattle and our cracker horses and the hogs that the Spaniards brought over, there would not be near one of the three here. The Spaniards brought them all over. We talk about that. I cut up a lot. I'm good about cutting up. Mainly what I do is tell the history of Florida and the cattle industry. And if somebody ever says anything bad about it, they don't want to do it around my camp because I do get violent. I will tell them where they can go. I'm really strict about the history of Florida.
Wormy, how long have you been in? Have you been in Florida all your life then?
I was born in Georgia.
Which part?
Middle Georgia, around Hawkinsville, Tippettville, Georgia. I'm a 10th generation cracker and 10th generation cattleman. I moved to Florida back when I was a little bitty feller. I've been messing with cattle for 50 years. I know I don't look that old, but my mama got off a horse long enough to have me and got back on, and I've been messing with horses and cattle all my life. I don't know that much about them, but once you get where you don't learn something every day, it's time to quit, and I ain't planning on quitting because I can learn every day. In this camp over here, if you come over there, I got stuff from 1960s till now, tools we've used. I'll tell you about the worm medicine. We had a green worm medicine that we filled it up in 6-ounce Coke bottles. Does anybody here remember the 6-ounce Coke bottles? There's a lot of them here that don't remember them, but we had 6-ounce Coke bottles. And then we'd run the cows down to shoot. There's a thin place where they couldn't turn around. We'd grab them by the end of the nose, pull their heads up. And back then, the cattle wasn't crossbred with Hereford and all them. And you could pull the heads back, and you pour that Coke bottle full of worm medicine down it. Well, if we was talking about the other day, and if it was suing people like they do nowadays, that company would be out of business. Because when you poured it down it, the steam from the cow's mouth and all, and the steam from the medicine would just take the hide, slap off your hands. I'd go home on weekends sometimes, and my dad could tell when I'd been working worming cattle because the whole side of my face would be raw. And if you notice in my beard, it's real thin up here. It's from that worm medicine making it so raw. I'll tell you the history of that. I got Bullet over there. Normally in my cow camps, I use the mule or a horse or a little old cracker horse. But I got Bullet to die today and for this weekend. I'll take him out there and I'll crack the whip a little bit. and then I'll lope him back so you can see you can crack the whip while you're loping. I'll answer all your questions you got. If I don't know the answer, I'll lie to you because you probably won't know the difference anyway. So everybody will be happy. Yeah, I'm from the South. You like that, didn't you? Yeah. You're a Baptist too, ain't you? The main thing they got me up here for is my whip. I ain't real good at it, but I try hard. Now I'm going to crack the whip unless you got some questions.
No, I can you tell me the first time you had a whip in your hands, though?
I can't remember that far back. I got my first whip when I was about 4 or 5 years old. And I got my first horse I got my first horse when I was born, but I started riding by myself when I was 4 years old. Started cow hunting about the same time.
And how is the whip used to hunt a cow? Or how can you tell a little bit about how the whip is properly used?
The whip is normally used just for the noise of it, to push the cattle, spook the cattle ahead of you. But every once in a while, you'll find a bad cow to come to you. You can crack her on the end of the nose with it or any other part of her body. The nose is the best. And if anybody here knows how thick a cow's hide is, you can take a whip and go all the way to the meat. I mean, a whip can scar you. I can show you scars on my body. I know for a fact it'll hurt you. It's just a tool. If people's been over to my camp, they realize now I have a certain whip I let other people use, but my whip I use all the time. I do not let nobody touch. You can't even touch it, look at it. I'm really strict about my whip. I got other whips at the house that nobody's ever touched but me. And all.
Would you give us a little sample? Do you have the room here to give us a little sample? Should we ask folks to stand back at all?
No, we can do it right away.
So you're all right?
I'm okay. Unless we catch something.
Okay, now there's ropes across the center in three places, Wormy. Drum roll, please. Wormy, they all want you to do it again.
Well, can they see right out there?
Yes, he's urging you to come visit him right next door to here.
No, no.
Oh,
right.
Can you see over there?
Over there.
Yeah.
Can you see that deer? Everybody see the deer?
The tractor?
Yeah.
John Deere tractor.
Yeah. Okay, you come with me and we're going to crack the whip right there.
Okay.
You come with me.
All right.
Okay. Here we go. All you do is crack the whip, go around,
I need a little work.
Yeah, need a little work.
I think we have a volunteer right here.
You want to try?
I'd like y'all to thank Wormy Wasserman. Give him a little round of applause. We're going to continue on the theme of cattle and ranching arts. I'd like to introduce the next Randy and Jackie Minger in just a moment, but I'm going to turn the microphone over to Dr. Tina Bukovalis from the Florida Folklife Program in one moment. She'll be with him. And I'd also like to thank you all for listening to the Folklife Performance Stage in the Space Coast Folklife area. And you can hear a little bit of Serbian music before we close out for the day. And I think I'd like to ask them to start off with a demonstration of ranching arts.
Again, we welcome you here to the Florida Folk Festival, the 49th time we've had the festival here in White Springs. And we're also welcoming here for the first time this year, Randy and Jackie Minger. And they're from De Leon Springs right now. Before we get started with a little roping demonstration, in which we hope all of you will participate, I'd like to have them tell you a little bit about ranching and how they got started in ranching. Also, Randy here does a blacksmith farriery. He makes the shoes out of just a bar of steel. Randy, can you tell them a little bit about how you got started in ranching?
Well, my uncle was in it, and I moved up here from Miami where I was born. My uncle had some cattle, and then I moved up here to go to school, and he had a few cows, and I just started working for other people, working cattle all over Central Florida. And it's what we call day working, and we'd gather cattle and work the calves and sell the cows, and basically just kept on with it, and then moved out west and kept working out there, and then moved back to Florida.
I understand you started learning how to make horseshoes when you were out west.
Yes, well, I was rodeoing out there. Rode bareback horses and bulls, and then a guy did come in off the. We were going to go to a rodeo, and we couldn't go. Horses needed trimmed, and the blacksmith that finally got there before I crippled him because I was going to try it. And I worked with him for about 2 years in New Mexico, Texas, Colorado, and Wyoming, and then I moved back home to Florida and continued on here.
Randy happens to live near Spring Gardens. Is that the name of the?
Spring Garden Ranch. It's one of the premier harness training centers in the country where they train standardbred race horses to go north and race. They race mostly in the east and the northeast.
But they're down here during the winter.
They break all their colts, uh-huh. And they're down here during the winter time from October to May. They're down in Central Florida. There's like four training facilities in the area. Spring Garden Ranch probably being the biggest one.
Right, and you're there helping them out with the shoeing.
I do most of the shoeing. I do all the shoeing for my clients' horses there. There's like 11 horse shoers come on the grounds. I'm the only one that has a shop on the grounds. I have a complete blacksmith shop on the grounds with the old coal fires, and we just ordered steel in to make our shoes out of. Some of the shoes are pre-made now, but a few of us still order just straight bar stock from the mills, and we hand-turn shoes and coal fires with an anvil and put them on the horses.
And then Jackie Minger here, she said, I think she was born on a horse, practically. Can you tell us a little bit about how you learned and when you learned different kinds of ranching skills?
Well, when I was a little kid, my dad used to go and day work, and I used to beg him to go with, so I could go with him, because it was so interesting to me. And he used to teach me how to rope, but he told me that the only way I could learn is if I could roll up the rope. And I went out there one day and just rolled up the rope, and then so he had to teach me how. And then we got into the team roping event, which is a rodeo event where you have a header and a heeler. And me and my dad and my brother, we used to switch off partners, and we'd go to different arenas and we'd rope. And then I went to Texas on a rodeo scholarship roping.
Was that unusual for a young woman to go on a rodeo roping scholarship? Were you in the same category as men, or is there a separate category for women?
For the team roping, men and women are combined together, but in my event, another event that I do is breakaway roping, which is kind of like calf roping that the men's do, but we're in a separate event. It's just for women.
Is there a difference in the size of the calves that you're roping or anything like that? Is there any difference at all?
The difference between calf roping and breakaway is in calf roping, the guy will rope the calf around the neck and jump off and tie the calf. And in breakaway, the girls just rope it around the neck, and then it has a piece of nylon string tied to the saddle horn, and it breaks off, and the quickest time wins.
I think this is a different kind of rope that you're holding than you were using before. Before you were using a nylon rope, weren't you? What's this?
This is a poly rope. It's for calf roping, but it's a lot easier to use. It's not as stiff as my other rope, so when people can come out here and try it, it'd be a lot easier for them, because I like a very stiff rope.
Could you show us a couple times, and then maybe people could try their hand on it, at it a little bit?
That was a bad loop. We don't clap for that one.
Okay.
But as Wormy was telling y'all earlier, the cow whip is a tool we use. So is a rope. We use it every day. When I go to day work, I've got a rope tied on one side of the saddle and a cow whip on the other side. And that's normal attire and that we carry everywhere we go.
Maybe we could get a volunteer or something to try. Any of you? And I'll warn you, it's harder than it looks. So now, Florida cow hunters didn't used to do a lot of roping, did they? Or
no, not at the start. Before the screw worm epidemic hit, they didn't rope at all. Then some of the old timers did learn how to rope. We had some very good ropers come out of here, but it's been probably in the last 20 to 25 years that maybe even 30 that we've gone to roping a lot in Florida. Everything, we all thought the woods were too tight to rope. So a lot of guys, there's some old Florida books where they used to hang out of the trees and they'd trap the cattle as they run underneath the trees and drop a rope on them because they just couldn't figure out, they had no open area to rope like they do out west. But in the last 30 years, country's opened up some and we rope a lot, use a rope a lot now. I learned to rope out west when I was working in New Mexico in the feedlots. Backwards, Jack.
And this has meant a change in equipment too. I don't know what came first, the roping or the saddle with that you could tie the rope to.
Well, your saddle was always first, and then you know they developed it with the western saddle with the horn, where you had a place to tie all your stuff on and, you know, a place to tie your cattle on. This roping in Florida, up north here, we do what we call dally roping, where you'll rope something, you make two wraps around the saddle horn that's covered in rubber to keep it from slipping. Down south in certain parts of Texas and different areas, they tie hard and fast, and they actually have a knot, the rope is actually tied to the saddle horn. It can't come loose.
Actually, this roper is from one of our other Folklife area participants, such as the dance group from St. Petra, Serbian Orthodox Church in Longwood. So your son is a good roper too, huh, Randy?
Yeah, Sean's real good. Both of my kids grew up rodeoing and roping. They started in high school rodeo. Jackie and Sean used to team rope together. And Sean got to riding bareback horses, and he just decided he didn't want to rope as bad as he wanted to ride bucking horses. We've been pretty much all over the United States, southern United States roping and riding bucking horses. And we've been to Colorado. He made national finals out in Colorado as a high school rodeoer. And we've rodeoed all over the place. He would still be rodeoing today, but he shattered his arm. He's got metal plates and screws in it from a bucking horse. So he's kind of backed off the bucking horses today.
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's when you rodeo, it's not when you get hurt, it's how, when, and how bad. that makes it. He probably had potential to be a national finalist, but broke it on the last, second to the last rodeo to go to the state finals, and he was either first or second in the state before he shattered his arm. It's a pretty rough sport. Jackie, like she said, she didn't get to day work as much with us as she'd like to, for the simple reason I was afraid she was going to get hurt. So Sean got to do the real cowboying, and Jackie come up doing rodeoing and got real good at it.
Rodeo is really big in Florida, too. I know all over the place there's I mean, down in Miami, it's still pretty big, and the area's right outside.
Anywhere north of Davie, Okeechobee County, Florida still have the largest cow-calf operation in the world.
Really?
In the United, well, let me make sure I'm right. It's in the United States. The Mormon Ranch, Deseret Ranch, they own 360,000 acres and run somewhere between 30 and 40,000 head of mother cows. And it is the largest cow-calf operation in the United States.
That's over near Fort Christmas, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
And when you say mother calf, that's just a breed, like a breeding station kind of thing.
They're brood cows, and then they raise their heifers back. And it's a breeding operation. Florida is pretty much a cow-calf state. We don't graze yearlings. They'll go out west. We'll raise our calves up, and I like to wean my calves around 500 pounds, and they'll go to an auction market, they'll go to a truck, and then they'll go to New Mexico, Texas, Wyoming, Colorado, Kansas, in your feed belt states, and they'll go to grass. We'll grass them cattle up till about 700 or 800 pounds, which we call yearling grazing, and then they'll go to the feedlot for the last 60 to 90 days. You want a steer to finish out at 1,100 pounds, and a heifer to finish about 1050.
That's amazing. So a lot of these cows from out west are all coming from Florida.
Probably a very good majority of them come out of Florida. At one time, for many, many years, we were number two beef producers in the United States. And now we're sitting about, we're even second or third east of the Mississippi now due to all the population growth. I think we're ninth in the country, totally in total cow numbers now.
Now, you're the vice president of the Volusia County Cattlemen's Association?
I'm vice president of Volusia County Cattlemen's Association.
How many people belong to that organization there, that chapter?
I think we've got 120 paid members and about 25 active members, like everything else. It's a real good organization. We put on a couple of rodeos a year and fundraisers for us. And our big thing this year is just to try to get people aware of beef industry in Florida again.
So most of the cattle industry in Florida is beef rather than dairy, or is it?
I can't give you percentages because I really don't know. Dairy was pretty big down south, but they got to worry about the runoff in Lake Okeechobee. And a lot of dairies have moved out and closed down. There were 7 active dairies in Volusia County, and now there's 1. There's a lot of people that'd love to still have more cattle than what we have, but the land is not available for the grazing that it used to be.
We've got about another 10 minutes if you want to, unless you're tired. Okay. Looks like we got a lot of up-and-coming young ropers here.
Up-and-coming cowboys. Well, there's always a need for them. As long as there's cows, there'll be cowboys.
Thank you. So do you also do shoeing for just local ranchers around your area as well as for the racing
Very little anymore, because most of the cow horses, we try to keep them barefoot without shoes on because of the terrain we travel in and the woods that we have cattle in. They'll pull their shoes off. They'll overreach and just take them off. So it's a lot easier to keep our working horses barefoot.
Is that true pretty much throughout Florida?
Pretty much, unless you get in real rough country. You know, Florida, our ground's pretty soft, so it works pretty good, not just to keep them unshod out here.
Now, is that true of Wormy's horse out here? I think I heard him say at one point that he didn't shoe his horse.
Right.
So, yeah.
None of my cow horses are shod. When I used to keep a few race horses around, they all stayed shod. But the cow horses, it's just much easier. And really, there's no purpose to shoe them, because in the sand, the deep sand we have here, you can't get aid to traction in them. It's not going to wear their foot off. So if you keep them properly trimmed, that's all you need to do.
So do you ever do any rodeo anymore, or is that pretty much a really young guy's sport?
That's a young man's sport. I haven't rode a bull or a bareback horse in probably 30 years. I do still rope some competitively when I have the time, but that's just for fun. Huh? I can't rope. Go ahead and rope it.
Now, Jackie, does your boyfriend rope as good as you do? I don't think so.
I don't want to rope.
Oh, go on. Yeah.
I don't even know how.
Oh, come on. I think we almost lost Randy. Probably one more. Oh, pretty close.
One way to handle cattle, and that's with a horse and a rope.
So you don't use the whips too much anymore on a regular basis?
No, we still use whips a lot. Whips are mainly for actually a dog whip. And we don't hit the dog with them. We use a lot of dogs in Florida that go to the front of cows and stop them. And then when I want my dogs to come back, I'll pop the whip, and my dogs will come back behind my horse. And then we can send the dogs and bring them back. Florida dogs are head dogs. We're out west, so I use a heeler that barks behind. But I want my dogs to stop the cattle. I can drive them fine. I need them to slow them down.
Uh-oh. Well, we're about to end up here, and we're going to have our next group on, but I would encourage you, if you're interested, to go over to the Folklife area. They'll be here just for a short time more today, about another hour, and maybe you can take a look at what they're doing over there. But I'd like to say thanks to Randy and Jackie Minger for all their help, and go see their setup over in that tent right over there in the Folklife area. Thank you very much. We're going to have our next performer.
Turn the switch off.
Our next performer is going to be Tomislav Jovanovic. I hope I got that right. We were going to have the Srpska Korona dancers. However, we have a special guest today who is playing the Serbian guslar, which is a very unusual instrument, especially this one. This looks handmade. I've never seen an instrument quite like this. Did he make it?
Yeah, it's handmade from the wood. He made it by himself. Right here we have an icon of St. Mary. And right here we have a symbol. It's like it can be two-headed or one-headed eagle, which represents the Serbia. It's like on a flag. Right here is an icon that represents the religion. And he made this, and he's going to do a little music with it.
What kind of wood is this made out of?
I know how to say it in Serbian, but I don't really know in English. It's called Javor tree.
And what part of Serbia is Tomislav from?
He's actually from Bosnia. A couple of us are from Bosnia, but we're Serbs from Bosnia, so we follow Serbian culture and everything because we're Serbs, but we're from Bosnia.
Has Mr. Jovanovic been in Florida for a long time?
He's been here for like 2.5 years.
And does he perform in the community or anywhere outside the community?
Well, we go to St. Pete. We perform in Chicago and Milwaukee, and St. Pete is where we have the other group. And we usually perform in our church where people gather and they just like to listen to it.
And your church is St. Petka, Serbian Orthodox Church in Longwood, yes.
One more thing.
Tomislav is going to perform a Serbian epic poem, which has to do with the origins of the Serbian people.
Yeah.
What's the name of this?
He's gonna do part of the song, which kind of represents how a Turk guy took the Serbian girl from Serbia, and then her mother asked her brother to get her back from Serbia, and he's gonna like sing that and do the music.
All right, we'll look forward to it.
Ejroni suze niz bijelo lice, to je majka Bogdana ljutice. Ej, sin je pita šta te majko mori, a plačući stara progovori. Moj Bogdane, moje sunce žarko, jako plačem i nije mi lako. Sjećaš li se, nije davno bilo, kad iz Bosne dolaziše paše i sa njima prokleti mojega. Te se srpskog narobiše blaga, tati naše dvore poharaše. Veljelicu ti, sestru, sine moga ti mlijeka, ej da ne tužim jadna, zove jeka.
Is anyone interested to try to do this somehow? Is anyone interested? Okay, go here. That's good. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead. Good job. Go ahead. Yeah, you can. She's actually doing better than me.
Ova koža je od mora za pjevac, kako se kaže.
Okay. I just want to say that this part of the instrument and right here is made out of the horse tail, the end, and right here this is made out of the chicken skin. It's everything is handmade. Even our costumes are handmade designed, and the flowers are handmade. We bought our costumes; they really cost too much, but we try to like do foundation work, and we go to baseball games and like sell stuff, and then we collect our money and buy costumes. For example, one of these costumes costs like $300. And they're really expensive because they're like handmade and they have to ship them from Yugoslavia, so. Huh? Oh, all right. These shoes that we wear are, they're called opanci. They're made from leather. They're also handmade and they curve, like the soles up front, they curve. And all the flowers and our socks are made from wool and they're really hot. And we usually have to braid our hair when we perform. Yeah, the bird and it's two-headed eagle. It's on our flag, and it represents Serbia. Yeah, you put your hand right here, and you just like touch it a little bit, and then here is where you do that. We're gonna have Brent do it too. Come on, Brent. You can do it.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. That's it for today. We're going to change the stage now for the dance this afternoon. I believe that starts at 5 o'clock, so you can come back and participate in dancing just a little less than an hour from now. Again, and you can see the Serbian dancers tomorrow at the festival, as well as Tomislav Jovanović. Thanks very much.